An error is an error is an error. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Instant Illumination. An error is an error is an error. That's kind of obvious, isn't it? Heinz and I were working on the computer this morning, sending materials online so that all of you can have the 17-18 one-hour meditations of the three-hour meditation program given down in Nigeria. And we had to first establish our numbers with the computer to get the computer to function. Well, we did everything perfect. We had everything right in front of us. We looked carefully at everything we did, and Heinz read the numbers off, and I punched the numbers in, and we did everything we were supposed to do, and made a couple of mistakes, and we corrected them, and then nothing worked. Nothing worked. We did everything. We asked Gordy on the phone about what we should do, and he says, "I'm coming over." So he came over. And he came over and he looked at this and he looked at that and he looked at this, and he went to everything that we did, and then he found one little number punched out of place. And one little number wouldn't let it operate. Just one little number. It was in a series of IP internet
provider
number, and one little number was out of place in the set of about five of three numbers each, approximately. And that messed everything up. Wouldn't let anything happen. Well, he fixed that, and off we went, having everything in divine order. But an error is an error. Now, why did we have that error there? Why were we so careless to do that when we were so careful not to do it? Well, as I like to tell people, if I'm going to type a story and I'm going to write it, I want you to proof it. "Oh, no, 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 you proof it yourself. You're always so good, you know." "No, I want you to proof it." "Why do you want me to proof it?" "Because you didn't write it. And you won't read into it what is not there. I will read into it what I didn't type there." Or I'll read into it properly what I didn't type there either. And it always pays to have another eye. Now, why is it that we need the other eye? Why is it that we need somebody else to look at it and check it over? Is it that they're more careful, or that they're going to give it a look in a different way? Or is it that we have the difficulty of thinking that because we're so good, and we don't make mistakes, and we don't mistype or anything like that? When I was in the University of Chicago, in the graduate school there, working in the library, I was working as a library technician, and my work was to type foreign languages on the cards. I was to type Greek on the cards, and Hebrew, and Italian, and Polish, and Russian, and you know, that's a fascinating thing to do. And believe it or not, my typewriter had all those fonts on it, and you had to know where those fonts were. So I would take everything that was Polish and put it together, and everything that's German and put it together, and everything that's Greek and put it together, because that way I would be in that Greek mode. And so then I would type this up, but they wouldn't always let me do that, because they had to get these cards out, get them done. And I was the most accurate person who ever did that. And so as I did this, I would take, and I was a good typist, a very good typist, and I would take the card, the information, and type it on the card, and I would go like this, duck, 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 letter by letter by letter by letter by letter. There were no words. There were, and it had no meaning to me. It was just letter by letter, by space, by letter, by comma, by whatever I was supposed to use. And I made virtually no mistakes. Virtually no mistakes. The only mistake I made was when I got distracted, or came back or something, and thought I was somewhere else that I wasn't, you know. But no mistakes. Now, why did I make no mistakes? Because I gave absolute 100% concentration to typing the letter that I was typing. It was the letter. Each letter was individual. And when I was done with letter perfect stuff. And people said, how could you type all these different languages and all these different letters? Well, if I say to you, write down A on the board, you write down A. I say, write down Z, and you write down Z. And I say, write down X, P, Q, D, R, letter by letter by letter. And then I say, you see, you have just spelled the most difficult word of the English language. Hi, my gosh, I did, you know, because you concentrated on putting down the letters instead of the word. Now, if I tell you to type down Constantinople, quite likely you might get an O and an N and a P out of place a little bit because you type, you know, you think you do. But your mind is saying Constantinople or Constantinople or Constantinople, and you know, you type what you think you're typing. We don't type what we know is the correct thing to type. Now, if all of us would go into our mind and go into our thinking procedures of only working on what it is that we are working on and have nothing else in our mind, then everything works out very perfectly. In fact, we make very little, very few, if any, mistakes. Now, I was just watching Ingeborg eat a piece of cheese here from our cheese container, and it's a very delicious cheese, and I'm not used to seeing people eat cheese by itself. I see them eating cheese with crackers, or eating cheese with toast, or eating cheese with bread, or eating cheese chopped up in a salad or something, but very seldom just eating cheese by itself, although we do eat cheese by itself, I know that. But to watch her eating that cheese by itself out of that little package, that rich, 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 beautiful cheese without using bread, I thought, what an interesting taste bud she must have. Now, does she make a mistake by not joining the taste bud of cheese with the bread or not? Well, I personally could never begin to eat like Ingeborg eats. Ingeborg does not know the word condominium. Or is it condiment?
Condiment.
She doesn't know the word condominium, condiment. She thinks that it's a condominium and that you put it with tons of this and that. It reminds me so much of when Stefan first came to campus and he fell in love with ketchup, and he would eat ketchup by the spoonfuls and just think, wow, this is great stuff. And I said, Stefan, that's a condiment. You just gently touch your bread with that, or you touch your wieners with that. You don't slobber them on there like it's going out of style. But that's what I want. Well, that's not what we do here. The condiments are very expensive. And so therefore, they're to be used gently and a little, because it's supposed to tease your taste buds. It's not supposed to appease your taste buds or destroy your taste buds. But Ingeborg, when she makes a beautiful sandwich with lettuce and peanut butter and cheese and ham, and then she has cayenne pepper on it, and she has garlic pepper on it, garlic sauce, and then salt and pepper too. And she puts that all together, and I think, this is the strangest thing I have ever seen in my life. Now, it's not strange that either any one of those are not good, but they cease their benefit of being a condiment. They cease their benefit of being a taste taser. They are no longer a taste teaser. They are they're destroying the taste buds in your mouth so you can taste nothing. You really can taste nothing. It's like people who like to eat hot, hot, hot stuff, you know, with hot peppers on it and hot this, and heated very hot. I think God made a mistake, and then really God did make a mistake, to design our mouth with taste buds. With taste buds that allow us to savor a beautiful drink, to savor a beautiful chocolate, to savor a beautiful candy or something like that, because we don't know how to use it. We just don't know how to use it. We go into so many things. Now, Heinz, are you aware that if you had just a tincture of arsenic, that you could no longer be here? Just a tincture of arsenic. Arsenic is a very powerful poison. And if you had just a little tiny bit of arsenic and you had that, you ate that, you'd die. Now, just a teeny little bit of ink in a glass of water makes the glass all colored. Condiments are supposed to be something that we use very carefully and very gently and very wonderfully. And I also enjoy how we sometimes serve our cookies in the evening. We will bring out a big box of cookies and letting everybody have as many cookies as they want. And the cookies, too, are supposed to be a condiment. Cookies are supposed to be something that has just been to sort of delight our taste buds to sort of finish off a wonderful meal. But if we're going to eat 3, 4, 5 cookies, we don't have that. Each person should be served 1 or 2 cookies, whatever our choice is. And if we serve just 1 cookie, is that good? Serve 2 cookies, yeah, it's pretty good. Serve 3 cookies, they're all right. Serve 4 cookies, yeah. Yeah. And it's the same with popcorn. When we serve popcorn, we serve a bowl of popcorn, and everybody's got their eyes on everybody else's bowl, thinking maybe they won't finish it. But if you have the bowls big, then the popcorn ceases to be a flavorful, joyful thing. And who has helped to train us to have it be different? Yes. The theater. Yeah, my brother-in-law. Yeah. He loved to make popcorn in shopping bags, and he'd bring a big shopping bag to each one of us full of popcorn, pepper, salt, and butter on it. Just, oh my goodness, you did eat the whole thing, really. You didn't know you were going to put it, but you ate the whole thing. But we make a mistake in life by not learning to appreciate the delights that life has to offer. I, to this day, remember my work at the University of Chicago in the library, and I can remember the head librarian there, and I can remember my desk. I had the best desk in the entire situation for the library, because I had windows on 3 sides and good lighting all around, and I was right in the middle of a bank of desks. You know, there were desks everywhere, and I was right in the middle of these banks, and no one ever bothered me, as they had to pass too many desks to get to me. And I was like in my own little paradise. And people would say, don't you hate to be right in the middle of all that? I said, I'm not in the middle of it. I said, you're surrounding me. I'm not in the middle of it. I am in paradise. I don't even know you guys are here. And I do things, nobody watches what I do, but they watch what all the rest of you do, because you're so obvious. And I just do my thing, just so I know what I'm doing, and make very few mistakes, but it's wonderful. Now, when we allow ourselves to destroy our taste buds, and we allow ourselves to destroy our mental capacity to enjoy, and we do destroy our mental capacity to enjoy when we overeat, we've been trained to clean our plates. We've been trained to think that we've always got room for some more. Instead of thinking that what we eat is the right amount for us, what we eat is a good support for our body functions. And you know, that's what it is. Now, another mistake people make is they say that the more clothing they put on, the warmer they are. That you should wear 1, 2, 3, 4 layers of clothing under very cold weather conditions, and you'll be very warm. Well, actually, that's not true. If you have no clothing on, you'll be very warm. And the more clothing you put on, the colder you feel. And you do. you feel cold. Now, why do you feel cold, Ingeborg?
Because you think it.
You think it, you think it, you think it, you think it, you think it. Ingeborg, don't ever tell me that you don't know the answer. Did you know that answer?
Also.
Also? Then why didn't you say it? You see, we are so sensitive to not wanting to make a mistake, especially when we're talking about making mistakes.
No, I was thinking about the kind of layers of which I put.
Well, then why didn't you say the kind of layers? They don't make any difference. Now, what if you had wool upon wool upon wool upon wool?
Too much.
Yeah, too much. But what if you had silk upon silk upon silk upon silk?
Also, that is only a few that keeps fine.
What if you had nothing?
Then nothing, well, then I use my mind.
Oh, why don't we do that right away in the beginning, use our mind? And of course, you're right. This is what we should be using. We should be using our mind, whether it's in eating, or whether it's in wearing clothing, or whether it's in doing anything that we do. It's really quite something. Mm-hmm. It's really quite something. I got up this morning, and I went to my computer to do some things, and as I was working on my computer, I wasn't dressed yet, and I hadn't looked at the thermometer. And I was just working away, putting out an email, and zipping along, and, you know, not thinking anything. And then I looked at the thermometer, and my goodness, you know, it's cold. It's in the 50s, you know. How about that? And I didn't even realize that. But when I realized it, then I said, oh, it's cold. Mm. Then I felt a little shiver go through me. But it's just a matter of our decision. And the temperature was just ideal for taking a walk. And Rex and I hustled along the path. It's wonderful. But we make a mistake by not taking advantage of our mind, by not taking advantage of what it has to tell us, all in things to eat and things to wear and things to say and things to do and in things to be. Practice on that. Work on that. And just remember, whatever stem cell you do not greet today and tell it what it is to do, it's going to be a stem cell that'll turn into a cell in your body that already is doing something that you may or may not like being done. Because it's just waiting for us to tell it what to do. Now, it's our greatest mistake in life not to train our children that they're geniuses, not to train our family to let them realize that they're the most wonderful people in the world, and certainly not to train ourselves that we are number one. If we would learn to do that, then we would realize that we were talking all the while to our stem cells and telling our stem cells what it is that makes us happy and makes us fulfilled. And this is the important thing in all of life to do. Each one of us can let go of the mistakes of life and do everything on purpose the way we want it done, by doing it right the first time. So, I invite all of you to join my Do It Right the First Time Club. It's now open for membership, and you will be charter members as you join.
Ah, I'm here.
I love you. I love you.
I love you. I love you.